President Trump targets what he sees as foreign freeloaders driving up the price of medicine. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. President Trump is proposing a major shift in how the government pays for drugs for seniors, saying it could lower prices as much as 30%. Healthcare is a top concern for many Americans with the midterm elections on the way. Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports.
The plan calls for Medicare, starting in 2020, to seek the much lower prices that European countries get for some of the most expensive drugs dispensed by doctors.
Yeah, this is a really creative proposal.
Dan Mendelson of healthcare consulting firm Avalere.
Basically, what they would do is create a benchmark of prices based on what drug companies are charging internationally.
Empowering Medicare to get those lower prices. This is something Republicans have resisted in the past, but Northwestern University healthcare economist Craig Garthwaite calls it the same Trumpian worldview behind recent tariffs.
Where the world is that other people are taking advantage of the United States, and we're going to be strong and we're going to fix that. And so we're going to force Europe to pay more by having the United States pay less.
He says European prices would go up a little with drug companies knowing they're simultaneously setting U.S. prices. Now, there's a lot of unknowns here. How it would work, if it would work, who it would affect. Those answers won't come until a draft proposal next summer, well after the November election. I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
The stock market, a very down Wednesday, a partial rebound Thursday, and this morning, the FTSE 100 in London is down 1.5%. Here, the S&P future down 1.3%, the NASDAQ future down 2.1% after Google and Amazon profits disappointed many. A benchmark for interest rates, the 10-year Treasury yield is down sharply at 3.08%. Sign up for our daily e-newsletter by October 31st, and you could be in for a Halloween treat. We're giving away 10 Marketplace treat bags filled with some great swag, including the coffee mug that I helped design. I thought it was a great line. They listened to me. Subscribe today at marketplace.org for your chance to win, and good luck. Of course, ideas matter, but let's talk to a Nobel laureate who showed that ideas are quantifiable and can be put into calculations showing how technological bright ideas boost the economy or fix the environment. That used to seem crazy to many other economists who tend to focus more on concrete things such as widgets coming out of factories, not seemingly mushy things like ideas. Dr. Paul Romer chews on all sorts of interesting matters, such as the difference between blind optimism, i.e. things will be fine, you'll magically have enough money for retirement, versus what is called conditional optimism. Retirement will be fine if we have a savings plan. Romer's an economist at New York University's Stern School of Business. The other day, he got the news that he was one of two winners of the Nobel Prize in Economics. Dr. Romer, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
I mean, since you won the prize the other day, I've been trying to catch up and read up on what you call conditional optimism. I'm trying to understand it better. This isn't just rose-colored glasses, aw shucks, technology progresses, be patient, a lot of this gets worked out. Can you give me a sense of what the nature of the conditional optimism is?
If you think about the fears people had a century ago about mechanization and the way this was going to destroy jobs, the complacent attitude would have been to say, it'll all work itself out. Everybody will be fine. That would have been the wrong attitude. What we had was this sense of we've got to do the right thing. In the 20th century, there was a high school movement that said we've got to get everybody up to the level of high school education to be able to do the new kinds of jobs that are coming. So if conditional on doing the right thing, in that case, a big investment in education, everything can turn out better for everybody. But if you just are complacent and say, it'll work itself out, you're not going to be happy with the outcome.
You know, it's funny you should mention that historical example. A crucial story we continue to follow here is what technology will do for, but also do to, the labor force. And with artificial intelligence, automation, robots are entering, you know, everyone says, a highly disruptive period. But I do talk to people who say, don't worry about it as a matter of policy. It's worked itself out in the past. Does your notion of conditional optimism help us with what tech will do to the workforce this time around?
Absolutely. And there's a cautionary message here because people can look at the past and say, hey, you know, the 20th century turned out fine, so there's no problem. It turned out fine because we did things to make sure it turned out fine. And so there's no basis for complacency in the success record that we can see when we look back. There are new things we need to do in the labor market, in education, and in thinking about the future of energy sources. As long as we do those things, everything really can turn out fine.
Now, many of our listeners will know that your dad, Roy Romer, was the governor of Colorado for more than a decade. You probably, I think, have a pretty good sense of how politicians tick. But help me understand this. You don't think that economists like yourself should be out there actually lobbying for the policies that they believe in?
One of the most powerful insights in economics is this idea of a division of labor. You do the thing you're good at, other people do something else that they're good at, the net effect is better for everybody. So there's a process that involves a kind of political entrepreneurship where, you know, someone like my dad or any other politician builds coalitions, they try to make a case for some kind of decision. That's something that I could see he was very good at, but I didn't want to compete with him because he was so good at it, so I wanted to go off and do something else. What we can do as economists and scientists more generally is say, we're not going to join the fight between the different sides. That's got to play out, but all sides will be better off if you start from an accurate sense of what's true. And our job is to be the ones who can say, here's what we know, and here's some things that you could try, but you ultimately are the ones who make the decision.
And before we go, Dr. Romer, at UC Berkeley, when they win a Nobel Prize, they get an assigned parking spot. Did NYU give you anything?
Well, let's just say we're in negotiations right now.
All right. There you go. Paul Romer, professor of economics at New York University's Stern School of Business and winner of this year's Nobel Prize in Economics. Dr. Romer, thank you.
Thank you.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Redmond Caralipio. Our engineer is Brian Allison. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.